Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 406. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing good, Kevin. How about yourself?
Cannot argue. It was definitely a week in wrestling, as you barely mentioned that. It made me thankful for the week that I had last week at Raw. I just as easily could have been this week's Raw, or at a Raw like this week's Raw. So I feel very thankful that someone decided to pick Columbus for a ring breaking and a very good Raw.
Yeah, definitely. This was not a good week for WWE in general. Not a lot of excitement heading in. On Raw or SmackDown, especially rough for Raw with a pay-per-view on Sunday that does not feel like it has any buzz. Now SmackDown's heading to our pay-per-view in 3.5 weeks that just doesn't even feel like it has any reason to even exist. It's just not a good week.
Yeah, I think that the two are kind of tied together, which kind of makes it easier to talk about whichever show, but. Because of the cross-promotional stuff that's going on at this pay-per-view, because, I mean, I believe Tom Phillips mentioned that SmackDown negotiated to have the Bray Wyatt versus Randy Orton match at a Raw pay-per-view.
Yeah, none of this makes any sense at all.
Yeah.
Nothing about this whole thing, and Bray Wyatt's abrupt, you know, arrival to Raw, with the Randy Orton feud thread still dangling, it made no sense. I know in Bray Wyatt's first promo, he did mention that he was bringing the House of Horrors to WWE Payback, and it said, no, none of it makes any sense. There's definitely, well, I'm sure we'll get more and more into. As seemingly we do every week, the presentation of Bray Wyatt that continues to falter week after week.
Yeah. Well, I guess since we're there already,
may as well be there.
We may as well be there. It was one of those things that I don't always put a lot of thought into who the possible mystery partner is going to be. Sometimes it's obvious. I'm not quite sure. I guess I didn't think about Bray Wyatt in that situation for The Miz. I'm not quite sure why The Miz, though I'm sure he would be thankful for the help, was positively giddy about the situation. I would think that someone like Bray Wyatt would give him the heebie-jeebies just in a character sense.
Yeah, no, nothing about that whole thing made sense. It did nothing for the pay-per-view on Sunday. It made Jericho and Ambrose look like chumps because they couldn't put Miz away in record time 2-on-1. The Miz ended up fighting valiantly and even and was even winning for a portion of the match.
I was sitting there that whole match. I'm like, this is really awkward.
It was totally awkward, and then, you know, out comes Bray Wyatt, and, you know, out of nowhere comes Bray Wyatt. He hits both baby faces with a Sister Abigail, and then hits Miz with a Sister Abigail, and the thing that just, with zero fanfare, zero hoopla, you know, just such a dead character at this point. No one cared at all. I almost had to laugh this morning when I saw that Bray Wyatt's, you know, running amok was given the slow motion video treatment on WWE's YouTube page. I'm just thinking, I didn't think Bray Wyatt could have moved any slower than he was moving last night. Just not a lot. Just not even a lot of energy from Bray Wyatt at all. Just then following up his horrible, horrible, even by his recent standards, promo earlier in the night.
Well,
how about it was a horrors match. It's just like, ugh.
That promo went back to all the bad instincts of them trying to give him flowery speech instead of just having a more direct message.
Yeah, it's all this, all the hocus pocus stuff, and all the about souls and damnation, and they have lost so much sight of what the character is supposed to be. The character that, you know, Dusty Rhodes, you know, created nearly 5 years ago, in the earliest days of NXT. He's a cult leader. He's not a wizard.
No, I mean, you need to have the obviously the Messiah complex to have a cult leader, but. Yeah, I mean, it's not grounded at all the way they present it. And there's just not much good about that right now.
No, not at all. And it obviously by the end of Raw, by what they showed on the end of Raw, he's in for a big push on Raw.
Oh.
Which I'm not looking forward to. I mean, East Ross, Jericho's going away. They've done that match. They did that match a million times years ago. They did him and Ambrose to death. They did him and Reigns to death. Seth Rollins, I guess, would be something new. Finn Balor would be something new.
Well, and that's the other thing that I guess I don't feel like has helped the shows at all. Because, Finn Balor ends up helping out Cass and who was on that team?
Seth Rollins.
Oh, yes, Seth Rollins. Duh. And it was just like, hold on, why is he involved in this if Bray Wyatt already set up a post-pay-per-view feud with this guy?
Well, to keep him on TV, I think.
He has
no real direction. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess that's the problem. Is I understand wanting to get him on TV, but they're just kind of mixing their messages. I guess. Like I guess I felt like there could have been a cleaner way for them to deal with that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. No. I mean the booking, the creative was very much a mess. There really wasn't. It does not seem to be much in the way of long term planning going on for anything. You moved Dean Ambrose over to Raw, but you have nothing for him for Sunday. Looked like they were going back with him and Miz, but now Miz is doing Miz TV with Finn Balor, which might lead to a match on the pay per view later in the night or something like that. But why is Dean Ambrose even on Raw? none of it makes any sense. And I know this is they're in a transition period. I'm sure they've got, they've got some bigger plans for the summer. I mean, that's why they're kind of going the direction that they're going now.
Right.
They've done a good job with Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman for the most part. That at least feels like something that's, culmination of something that's been going on for a while, and it's gonna be it feels like a big match.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's the only one that they've done a good job with for this pay-per-view. Because yeah, everyone else, oh man, it's been rough, but I'm trying to think if there's anything else to talk about with that whole soiree of people. But, I guess the other thing to mention is that Finn Balor got to play the part of Enzo Amore which made things even more awkward in my opinion. Just like, really? Like he came out to be the big gun and now he gets to be Enzo. This doesn't sit right with me.
Well, they love knocking around Enzo and giving him no physical credibility at all, which maybe he doesn't have. Maybe he doesn't have any, and he should just be outside the ring and not in the ring on any kind of regular basis.
Yeah.
But the way they're doing it is just it's just. I mean, they are. They're absolute. They're burying the guy. You
Oh.
know, they got him out there to do his spiel, but they didn't want him in the ring. So they just took him out.
Yeah, I guess that's the other thing. That's the other end of things to look at too. Yeah, I guess it's still funny. Like they still seem hesitant to do things or do anything that resembles a manager too much these days. They're okay with the occasional valet, but the whole manager role just is not it's not something that happens. Of course, it would be really awkward. Like I would have to say that Enzo would have to change his character somewhat if you would kind of have to take him seriously, at least somewhat, as Cass's manager.
Right, yeah. It's obviously not working out with him in the ring. They have no faith in him. It's just it feels weird that Enzo and Cass might go down as having never winning tag team gold in NXT or on the main roster before they fully transition. No, to be
And
cast to a singles role and maybe Enzo to a managerial role, but
yeah, and they are so over. Like
they are.
I mean, there is no two ways about it. Like as little faith as the WWE has in them, like from the first time that I saw them live, like everyone pretty much was in on doing the entrance with Enzo. I feel like it's been three Raws now that I've seen him at. And it's just like you said, like the fact that they might not get the titles is pretty crazy. And I understand both points of view, I guess. Like I understand why everyone finds Enzo's shtick entertaining. I also understand that the WWE doesn't want some of their own getting hurt because someone's incompetent.
Yeah, and this one is, you just gotta go all the way to those words. I mean, in a way, it is their fault. They trained the guy to be the partner in peril in a tag team, and that's it. They gave him very little opportunities to show what he could do offensively, or to really teach him how to throw punches, how to do this, how to do that. And so he's only trained to take a beating, but he's not very athletic. He's not very graceful. He takes bad falls off of moves. He's not, again, he said he's not graceful. You know, what cooperation needs to go into slams and suplexes. Even though he's this little guy, there are moments where even a guy as strong as Cesaro seems to be, struggling to pick him up because he's just dead weighting him the whole time. He's not any good.
Yeah.
It's that simple. He's really bad.
Yeah, like I said, that's why I understand how the popularity happens, and I also understand again, like, how bad he is. Like, just the couple of gifs of him really botching, it's just like, ooh, man. Like, it's, and again, and I think we've been over this, but they were down in NXT for a couple of years, at least 2 years, right?
They were down in, they were NXT for a really long time. Like, as a team, it might be, yeah, it's got to be, you know, at least 2 years as a team, maybe even three. There was a period where Enzo was injured. Enzo, I think, had a very serious knee that put him out for like a year, where Kath was doing
Oh, yeah. And this was definitely, I remember hearing that story now. It was definitely before I started watching NXT on a regular basis.
Yeah. So they were there a long time. I mean, the act got over huge everywhere it went once they got it down. They were booked very carefully on NXT. Obviously, just like in WWE, that Cass was in the ring most of the time. But in transition, but once again, Raw is live. And NXT can be taped up to 4 weeks in advance.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah.
So who knows how much editing went into some of his worst stuff in NXT.
This is true. You always, or at least I always forget about the editing capabilities. Just because both shows are live now, I kind of forget about it. Like, you could always tell that there were certain spots where SmackDown was edited in the past. But now, and I don't know how long they've been running the live portion of it. There's been less raw review on the show because they've needed to use the time, although they obviously played the Bray Wyatt promo again on SmackDown. But again, that's kind of more the problem of them mixing the brands right now and not having that fully shook out yet. So, I guess I forget about the possibilities of editing, despite the fact that NXT is exactly that.
Right, yeah. The tape natures of NXT can hide a lot of people on NXT house shows. You know, people are just there to, you know, people are there to have a good time. They're there for the sing-along. You know, I'm sure their matches weren't very long on NXT house shows. But when the lights are on, and it's, you know, when it's Monday Night Raw, Enzo has had so many bad moments, including one on pay-per-view last year where he nearly, it could have been very, very serious. It was for a time. I mean, that he, It was really scary when his head bounced off the ropes and then bounced off the mat. That was his own. I believe that was his own. Yeah.
Well, I do remember Steve Austin saying that what's his name needed to Simon Gotch needed to know when to not toss someone as hard. That did not help Enzo out at all.
Well, Simon Gotch wasn't any good either. Yeah, he no longer works for the company.
Yeah, well, at least that was his personal choice. I'm not sure what good that'll do him, honestly.
Right, no, he's got nothing going for him. You know, Enzo, though, there's obviously, there has to be a place in the company for a guy like Enzo for, you know, quite a while. You can't let a guy with those kind of verbal skills go or just not capitalize on them. So they're gonna have to figure this whole thing out. In a way, because obviously Big Cass does have potential. They see the potential of him as a singles wrestler, but I still see them as an act that needs each other. Cass doesn't have the personality to make it on his own. Enzo obviously doesn't have, couldn't wrestle, just can't wrestle the quite his way out of a paper bag. So,
yeah, you know,
they still need each other in some capacity. Even if it's not tag team partners, they still need each other.
I would think so. But it's kind of funny, just because the WWE's kind of come around on a lot of thoughts about wrestling. Like, obviously, something like 205 Live is not something that I would have thought about them doing. Not that they're doing it well, but they are still doing it. And, you know, I think that they come around on something like turning Enzo into a manager. Just, again, I mean, it seems pretty obvious what they're all doing. So, or what the WWE is doing. Like, there, nothing seems very hidden about that. So,
no, not at all.
And I'm trying to think of what else wasn't completely snoozeworthy on Raw, I suppose. I'm trying to think of the tag team situation with Sheamus being the cooler of the two heads between him and Cesaro is interesting, or if it doesn't really mean a whole lot of anything, because those two are just kind of chumps of a tag team division now.
Yeah, no, it doesn't really mean anything. I mean, I like their act at points, but right now, really, the tag team division seems to be at a standstill, at least until the Hardys are able to make their broken transition. Because you can already tell the nostalgia Hardy Boys is already starting to run its course.
Well, and that's kind of an interesting thing to me, is that if the WWE has secured the rights, if they need to, and it would seem that way, you kind of need to retell the whole story in a lot of ways. You can tell it differently. Oh, yeah. But having them come in and get on top, but then go on some style of a losing streak, is the perfect formula for it. Like, it's kind of weird that to get there, you need to do what they've pretty much done with every returning team, and that's, you know, blow their load as soon as they come in right away.
Yeah.
But those other teams haven't had somewhere to go. If the WWE is doing the broken version, it's somewhere to go. Like, it's the first team that's possibly ever going to survive the terribleness that is the WWE tag team division.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah. I think the act will be huge in WWE. I think they'll have huge merchandising opportunities. But yeah, they do need to retell the whole story. I could see, after two separate singles losses, I could see Sheamus and Cesaro taking the titles, and then we start the process of breaking the Hardys all over again, or breaking them for the first time for most viewers, honestly.
Yeah, for a good 2 million of them.
Yeah.
Well, at least 2 million of them. They weren't even getting 1 million viewers at that point, so fuck TNA.
No.
I guess it's kind of interesting. Like, I guess I don't expect... I don't know why I didn't think about Cesaro and Sheamus actually winning it, but I mean, that could start the process, and I like them enough as a team, but they're still not very well written, because there's no reason for Cesaro to flip out in that situation, I guess.
Right, no.
You
no,
know, since no. he's that, the, that, always that, the cooler that of the two heads.
Yeah, well, I wasn't a fan of that finish at all.
Yeah, I honestly expected the one win and one win, which everybody loves more times than not, too. Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think of what else on Raw there was worth talking about, man. Yeah, I mean, is there anything to really talk about with the ladies?
Well, yeah, they
oh,
did
and
they did what they could do with a week to establish an issue with Bayley and Alexa Bliss. I mean, Alexa Bliss is arguably the best of the ladies on the microphone at this point. She was really on point. She did a really good job, trying to set the stage, essentially almost taking the place of Charlotte with the similar digs at Bayley, calling her a child. And God, I hope that line about have you ever even kissed a boy doesn't lead to some sort of romantic interest. as we take Bayley's character literally and actually treat her like a child or a mentally challenged adult, that would just be so, and actually played up that, at almost 30 years old, that's her first kiss. It's just like, oh, please, let's not go there.
Yeah, it doesn't need to go there for any reason whatsoever. So, yeah, I really hope that it doesn't go there.
I mean, I know the whole Alexa Bliss, Sasha Banks finish is getting derided by a lot of people, but granted, I guess you could blame them for even booking a match in the first place where they didn't want either to lose, but I was happy to see someone just walk away from a match that did not matter to them. So many times we watch people go through these matches where they're already in title contention, they've got nothing to gain and everything to lose. Why would they go through with this match? That match? But Alexa Bliss just walked away. And took the count out. She had nothing to win.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the few times that it made sense. And there's the other thing that usually annoys me about people walking out is that they usually get into something of a knockdown, drag-out fight, and then they're like, oh, nah, this has gotten too hard now. Fuck it. It's just like, isn't that thought already crossing your mind, like, when you get into this matchup? And she did it pretty early on in the match. To me, I appreciate that. It's just like, yeah. Nah, fuck it, I'm out of here. Rather than dicking around and being in the match. She got knocked out of the ring once, and she's like, you know what? I'm out here already. Let's just leave. Zero. I had zero problems with that, with that one.
Yeah, no.
So, and she's the heel. I mean, what more could you do, heelish-wise, than chickening out of a challenge? You know? I mean, that's perfect heel stuff.
Right, yeah. Oh, yeah, so that was good. I mean, I think that they'll have, on Sunday, I think they'll have a pretty good match, and obviously they'll have, tremendous crowd heat, being in Bayley's hometown. Yeah, so yeah, I thought that was all fine. We touched on Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman.
Oh.
But we haven't actually talked about the dumpster match.
Yeah. This was one of those things that when I was at Raw Live last week, I was looking at the stage area now of this set, and I was like, wow, that isn't very high. And this week it didn't look any higher, and it really kind of hurt the whole pushing a garbage can off of the stage thing, that it fell like it. I'm sure that it is much better for safety purposes for Kalisto than it was for Road Dogg and Billy Gunn?
Well, no, it was Mick Foley and Terry Funk who actually took the ride.
Oh,
Terry
that's
Funk,
right.
Terry Funk, I said this morning, Terry Funk did get hurt when he did that nearly 20 years ago. There was an injury there. Even though, if you remember when they were actually removed from the dumpster, that there were just like packing peanuts everywhere.
Oh.
So it didn't look good, but it actually hurt more. I mean, you could see when they did that with Kalisto, when they had the shots inside the dumpster, there were actually bags, garbage bags filled with whatever in the thing. So I'm sure right. He was like pretty protected there.
Right. And if you're just in there by yourself, you can brace yourself a little bit better. You can't really, you'd have to brace yourself on the other person.
Yeah.
Even though he's not the biggest guy, I would think he'd be able to stretch out enough to reach all four sides, or you know, two sides to help brace himself.
Yeah.
So, it doesn't look as impressive with that ramp or with that stage area being lower.
No, it wasn't impressive at all. It wasn't anything that like really made you gasp or anything.
Right.
Yeah. You know,
what he did to Roman Reigns, to me, was far more malicious. Like, just running that cart into someone who's, backed up against a block wall is way worse than pushing that dumpster over. But because he did it, it made sense storyline-wise, at least, why the match came about. So it's hard to fault that part.
Yeah, no. It was fine for what it was. You can argue the merits of Braun Strowman tactically losing that match, or any match at this point in his development, but it was obvious they don't. Winning match was the worst thing that could have happened to Kalisto. I mean, Braun Strowman was really impressive when he was literally picking Kalisto off the ground by his throat with one arm and just choke slamming him down over and over again. I mean that was actually looked better than the dumpster ride.
Yeah, and that's one of those things where it's hilarious where they do on commentary make a big deal out of the wins and losses, but honestly, no one is going to think about Kalisto being the winner of that match when. A, Braun Strowman is fighting Roman Reigns on Sunday, and B, Braun Strowman continues to be levels and levels above Kalisto as far as where he's placed in the hierarchy of the WWE.
Right, yeah.
So, what Strowman did after the match, like, it was great, because I feel like Strowman's been caught kind of dicking around with his opponents a couple of times, although they didn't really make that big of a deal out of it, but he has had a habit of overlooking opponents and it costing him, but they can't really sell that angle against Roman Reigns, though, so...
Right, no. I mean, it's gonna be obviously the match with Roman Reigns is gonna be a war. It's gonna be a fight. See where they go with it, though. If they just go with, so much depends on whether is Brock Lesnar working Extreme Rules? Is he working in July? Are they pulling him off until SummerSlam? What the hell do you do if it's all the way to SummerSlam or even July? What do you do with Extreme Rules? You keep Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman going. You do a non-finish. Yeah. Which is going to be really an unsatisfying way to end the pay-per-view. Since I have a feeling that match is going on last, but I don't think you can trust Randy or Bray Wyatt to keep people's attention at the end of the show. But I know you can't. It's it's the feud that just needs to end.
You know, you brought up Oh, go ahead.
No, just saying, Brock is still not advertised for any dates before SummerSlam. Obviously, he'll be doing Raws before then, but is he doing Extreme Rules? Is he doing Raw's July pay-per-view? No one knows that yet.
Well, and that's what I was going to say, is that's kind of another thing that's boning the WWE right now. I have been on board with them just using Brock Lesnar sparingly. But in the past, they've done a pretty decent job of, covering for Brock's absence.
Yeah.
By having Paul Heyman.
The last time they had Brock Lesnar as champion, the rosters were intact, and John Cena was still wrestling full time. There's a difference this time.
yeah. Like, they really need to... Again, like, I'm okay with him not being there every week on Raw, but they really need to give him some type of a presence through Paul Heyman to make sure... There's been any number of tournaments for number one contenders. You know, they haven't even billed the Strowman versus Reigns match as a number one contenders match.
Yeah, which makes me think that they might try to figure out a way to stretch this out. You know, again, Brock's not working at Extreme Rules, because Extreme Rules is supposed to be the gimmick match pay-per-view where, you know, a bunch of anything goes type matches on.
Yeah, and there's no need for him to work anything like that, in my opinion. But although he can do well in those matches, although that last one was a train wreck that he was in. Come to think, it was the one with him and Ambrose, the last one.
Yeah,
that was. So, I'm okay with Brock taking off again and. But, yeah, again, they need to do something about that. Like, have a number one contenders matches. Have something to at least throw things...
Yeah.
You know, at least keep Brock's name in the conversation.
Right. That's the thing I was saying, though, is... You can do a screwy finish in this match coming up between Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman on Sunday to... at least just a gimmick match of Extreme Rules for the number one contenders. You could do that. But on a show that's kind of weak going in, you got this match with Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt, which might be one of the dumbest matches of all time. Not too much else. And then you go in the main event and do a non-finish. Ugh, that could leave a bad taste. But I guess that's the way they got to do it. It's the way they got to do it, because they really have no other main events, right?
Yeah, and I don't... Oh, yeah, because they just have the one pay-per-view in between. Is it just Extreme Rules SummerSlam now?
No, they're doing... I think they're bringing back the Bad Blood name for a pay-per-view in July before SummerSlam.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
They still got two more shows before SummerSlam here.
Okay. Yeah. I hope that they do not try to extend things for Reigns and Strowman any further than I'd feel better if they finished it off. At this pay-per-view, but I feel like they could probably milk another pay-per-view out of it if they needed to.
Yeah, they could, and they might have to.
So, I suppose that leaves us around the SmackDown area of things.
Yeah, speaking of having to milk a pay-per-view dry, Backlash is looking like it's going to be rough and just have no need to exist. SmackDown's in a real transition period, and they could have used to not be on pay-per-view until.
Yeah, it's, and again, like, because Randy Orton's tied up with Bray Wyatt, it kind of makes that transition with Jinder Mahal even harder than it already is.
Yeah, it does. It really does. I mean, they did the best they could. They really, Jinder, I mean, he cut a good enough promo. Once again, it's so out of nowhere. He's never mentioned having rich parents before. He's never mentioned his Playboy lifestyle before. It just, you know, before last week, it's just so out of nowhere. They're already transitioning to Rusev.
Oh.
Unless Jinder Mahal is going to... Unless Jinder Mahal is going to take the title, and they're going to really build up to the Jinder Mahal Rusev tag team explodes at
no one was begging for.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, once again, they're doing what they can with Jinder Mahal. I still can't believe this is happening, but you know they're doing it. I mean, said Jinder did fine. They're gonna, you know, they're going to the old school bag of trips by doing a steal the belt angle, which is fine. It needs something. And obviously they don't seem to want to go all in with a big ethnic, you know, angle here. So they're gonna make it more about stealing the title, which I guess I understand. In today's atmosphere, maybe not wanting to go too controversial.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm not...
It's there.
Right.
The ethnic baiting of the angle is there, but it's not going that far. At least not yet.
I mean, I don't feel like the WWE writers half the time can handle just a regular wrestling angle, so I'm not sure that I have faith in them to handle something that is a more delicate situation.
Right, yeah. I don't know, maybe we'll get really controversial and apologies will have to be issued all over the place by the time this is all said and done, but for right now, you know, it's pretty basic stuff, you know, and once again, I guess it's fine, but it doesn't seem like they have, unless they're going to shock the world, it doesn't feel like they have a lot of faith in Jinder Mahal, and they're going to use Rusev in this spot anyway. It seems to me that, you know, with Rusev injured, they just went with, you know, a stopgap, and as soon as Rusev's back, Jinder Mahal's back down the car. Maybe not as far as he was before, but he's getting knocked back down.
Yeah, and I guess that's the one thing that when I see something like this, I'm always just like, man, don't completely waste this time.
That's what I was saying. It's like there was no need to have Rusev do a promo talking about a title shot at Money in the Bank. Money in the Bank isn't for nearly two months from now. Well, let Jinder Mahal at least do something. But, you know, maybe this can work. But it seems that they're counting on it not working already.
Yeah, because did he say that was because of his injury that he couldn't be back before then?
No, he's saying he's basically he never wanted to go to SmackDown in the first place, and he's on strike until he gets the title shot.
Oh, okay. That's it. I don't know why I felt like I might have missed a little bit.
Yeah,
but I didn't. yeah, and that just.
There was no need to do that until after Backlash.
Well, yeah, there's that. It's one of those things, too, that they never made it sound like anyone who changed brands had a choice. And now Rusev can hold out.
well, Rusev says he just go back to Bulgaria if he doesn't get the title shot.
Well, yeah.
He just quit wrestling then.
Yeah, I guess for a guy that gets injured a lot, I'm not sure why you just cave into that. But, you know, I mean, they're going to. I guess maybe that's another problem, is that it's just one of those angles that I'm just like, okay, none of this really makes any sense, so why are you writing it this way?
Yeah, it's not good at all. No, none of this is necessary, and that's the story of Backlash.
Oh man. And I'll tell you what, at least the ladies there got some time. It obviously was kind of interesting that once Charlotte started to get the Charlotte and Naomi got the beat down from the heels, that Becky Lynch, who got a talking to earlier, did not show up to save, as you mentioned, the probable baby face of the SmackDown Women's Division, Charlotte.
Yeah, no, they're gonna, they'll let this play out for a little bit, or at least until next week. It looks like it's gonna, you know, a Backlash, or there might not be a women's title match, but a six-woman tag. Which I guess, once again, something to get, you know, on a nothing show, as this is looking like it's gonna be.
Yeah, you know, may as well have a nothing match.
And springboard off of there to build to a women's title match at Money in the Bank. I mean, the possibility that they put the women's title online in a ladder match at Money in the Bank is there. With six women involved in the storyline right now. So we'll see if they go there or if they transition to something, you know, one-on-one for, you know, a one-on-one feud out of it. But it looks like they're going to do it just run with a six woman. We'll see if Charlotte's baby face turn is a full baby face turn, or if she, you know, turns against her partners or anything of that note.
They can certainly run things that way for Becky Lynch being hesitant to help out.
You have to play it that, you know, can Naomi and Becky trust? If you're going to do that, you have to play. You can't just have them be buddy buddy. You have to play up. They can Naomi and Becky play Charlotte angle going into the can they trust Charlotte angle going into, you know, going into
the right. I guess that no matter what these days, it's interesting when a baby face does not help out.
Well, she would have gotten destroyed.
That is also true.
Charlotte and Naomi were both down for the count. She would have just gotten destroyed. So I got you could. Or she was still thinking about the things that Charlotte had done to her in the past, and, you know, she has to contemplate whether she wants to help Charlotte. You know, there's ways you can play it. I'm sure they won't drag it out too long.
I guess I was just saying that typically you see some level of immediate assistance, but I guess it doesn't bother me that it didn't happen in this instance. It's just more of a surprise factor. You know, I guess another story that is not being helped out by the co-branding is Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho.
Oh no, we're so past that right now. It's like all that work for so many months, and they ran against the time. You know, they wanted to save their first match against each other for WrestleMania, but then after that, this feud is this. You know, this whole incredible storyline and feud is, you know, going out with a whimper, and that's sad.
Yeah, that is a pretty apt description. Blowing your tongue like a child, to make a fart-sounding noise is about the way things have gone. And like you said, it's definitely too bad. Because, and again, like we keep on talking about how they're setting storylines in motion while other ones are still going on, and it's just kind of clouding things that Kevin Owens and AJ Styles are on a crash course already.
Yeah. Oh yeah. We are totally building up Kevin Owens and AJ Styles. Right. We're not even. They're not even pretending to cheer quite a shot on something really. Outside of a you know, a little bit of a.
Well, and that was one of the few things that I did think was kind of interesting is that. They did mention, or it seemed like they were saying that Kevin Owens would stay on SmackDown no matter what now. Which I don't feel like was what they were saying previously.
Yeah, it's all a mess. This whole thing is a mess. We're very awkwardly transitioning to these new rosters. Which is weird because it's, you know, this was, the shakeup was supposedly, you know, at least the germ of idea has been in place for months, but obviously they made a lot of last minute changes. You know, or nothing that was originally thought about, you know, months ago actually came to pass, and they changed their mind a bunch of times, all the way up to the last minute. And now they're having to rush through other stuff. It's just, yeah, it's a shame, especially when it came to Owens and Jericho. They really could have used at least a 3 pay-per-view feud.
Oh, right.
They're getting, and you now they're only getting a second, and this one has just been, you know, it's been horrible.
Yeah, you know, it always seems like at least when the babyface wins the first one in a feud, they usually give the heel some type of an opening to complain about in the following months so that they can get a rematch. It's to me, it's always a little more interesting when the babyface gets the rematch. Like I never feel like it's quite the same to me. Because they can't complain about any type of an illegal loss, but they just won another match. You know, it just falls a little bit flat for me.
Yeah, flat's a good way to describe it. It's a damn shame. I mean, they did so much work into this, and now it's really gone to waste. I mean, their WrestleMania match was good, but not great. They were, they were on second after, you know, a barn burner of a match at WrestleMania. So they really didn't. I don't feel like they got to show that their best match they could against each other at WrestleMania because it wasn't their time.
Right.
But also, it feels like their time has already passed. And No matter how good or great of a match they have on Sunday, it just won't feel like it means much.
Yeah. I guess that's part of what I was just going to say is that they can still have a better match. Like, I would hope, similar to some of the other recent big man matches, that the Reigns versus Strowman match isn't terribly long. That leaves Orton and Wyatt for a longer match, and I would think Owens and Jericho. But yeah, it's still going to lose a little bit off the fastball. That it's kind of, you know, it doesn't matter right now.
Yeah, no, and there's no drama. There's how could anyone, you know, over the age of 10 years old, believe that Chris Jericho has any chance to win this match?
Yeah, I don't know. like you said, or like we've been talking about, I mean, they've already set AJ Styles and Owens up, so it's just like, well, yeah, it's not going to be AJ Styles and Chris Jericho taking on each other, especially right now, since Styles is definitely more of a openly babyface character at this point, or at least the crowd treated it this way. That way this week.
Maybe you could have Jericho in it, go to SmackDown for a few weeks if he. But no, I've seen Jericho's schedule. I believe he's got a concert on the 21st, you know, on May 21st. So you can't even do that.
Yeah, and that's the other thing that does make things awkward. Like,
he is active. If you follow him on social media, he is actively promoting his tour. He's actively promoting all these May dates.
Yeah, and I mean, that's another thing that might not be helping this feud is Jericho's just general schedule.
Yeah.
But the WWE's done more to damage it than Jericho's Jericho's schedule.
This is all on WWE. There are ways around that. A lot of the audience isn't gonna really know how imminently Jericho's leaving. But yeah, they have not done it. Even if you didn't know, it still feels like it still feels empty.
Oh, agreed. You know what else feels empty, Chris?
What's that?
TNA's attempts to get more viewers.
Oh man, what? The Josh Matthews Jeremy Borash feud isn't doing it for you?
Oh. They have a feud going on?
Oh my god, we're gonna
I yes, haven't folks. Yes honestly yes, folks. I
we're
haven't
talk about a show we haven't either of us has watched in the last 2 months.
Yeah, I'm trying to think because I watched the week after when the Hardys had the belts dropped into what was their Sanity's hands. I know it's not Sanity. But
Decay's hands.
There we go. So I watched the episode, and I haven't watched since, I don't think. Or maybe I watched once since then. And I guess I just got interested because I saw a couple of the names that they brought back. But this is how uninterested I also am, is that I haven't even looked at spoilers for the shows at all, or even read a review. Like, that is how little interest I have. But I've seen the headlines of Loki, Matt Sydal, and Matt Morgan coming back.
As well as Chris Masters and the name Chris Adonis.
Oh.
And Big Papa Pump Scott Steiner.
Oh, yeah, he was the big one. Oh my god, I'm so glad you reminded me of that one. Because I was just like, oh my god. Like, it's a show that I would go to and probably be entertained if it was at a 200-seat venue somewhere inside the confines of Columbus. It is not something I want to watch on national television.
Right, no.
Like, I liked Loki. I still don't think he's bad, but it's... And that ship is kind of sailed.
Loki was on the very first TNA show ever. When they were and 15 years ago, Loki was a great performer, but we're talking about someone once again who's been doing this for a very long time now.
Yeah,
he had a run in WWE where they were not behind him at all, and it was just a joke and. He probably deserved better. But at that point, it's just like, he's just had so little... I haven't seen him wrestle in a long time, but It just, yeah, nothing about it that makes sense. It's just like, yeah, he's going to be the X Division champion again. It's just like, at the very least, the X Division title should be something new, on someone new. And to bring back, you know, the guy, you know, a early to mid 2000s indie darling, you're just going too far back in your own history. It pulls something out that just wasn't that special back then.
Yeah, and I mean, Matt Morgan, he hasn't been able to capitalize on a bunch of T-balls that have been set up for him.
Oh, yeah, no, he hasn't hit it. He's whiffed it every time, you know, every time. He doesn't have it. And yeah. At over 40 years old now, he's definitely not going to have any.
Yeah, and Scott Steiner, I don't know how old he is at this point, but it's just like, I don't care how good a shape you're in, it's just kind of gross at this point. So, yeah, like, none of that stuff is going to draw me in. Like, that's one of those ones where, you know, if they brought in someone, and I guess Matt Sydal is one of those guys that I really loved, but when I first saw him in Ring of Honor, but that was a long time ago. I mean, because was it 23, that WrestleMania 23 that was in Detroit?
Yeah.
So yeah, it was that weekend that that I saw him for the first time. I'm pretty sure it was there and not Orlando the following year. But I was just like, holy shit, I saw him do a Shooting Star Press and I couldn't have been more impressed. And you know, nothing's kind of gone right for the guy, and of course he's kind of been the perpetrator of some of his own problems.
Right, yeah.
I mean, he's just another guy where he might be a little bit younger than Loki, but the ship has kind of sailed at this point. You know, I kind of enjoyed a little bit of his work in ROH, but they didn't really get behind him either.
No.
So it's just kind of like, well, no one's getting behind you now. Why should I care about you? So, yeah, like, if TNA needs to bring in someone fresh, not someone old, like, I can't believe I still have to say these things out loud into a microphone. Like, TNA just doesn't, they don't get it at all. Like, management has changed, but they're still doing the same dumb stuff that the old management did.
Old management. That's what it is. They went back to Jared. What can you say? The first thing these Anthem people did when they ousted Dixie was bring back Jeff Jarrett. And all his Global Force gold.
Which, again, had nothing behind it. Like, I still can't believe that was a company that at least a few wrestlers went to on purpose, including Mickey James' husband.
Oh, yeah. I mean, those tapings will never see the light of day.
I know that I saw when I was scrolling through Stunt Granny's Twitter from time to time, you know, like, oh, we're doing this date and this, and I saw a report from time to time, but it's just like, how are these people making any money? Like, I don't, like, it seemed worse than a regular independent. Like, as far as the consistency of the shows.
When they were doing those ballpark shows at 5,000-seat ballparks, and kid doing like 100 people. Oh, that was so brutal. Jeff Jarrett has always been known to play the long con game and got it all back. Whatever it all is, obviously it's important to him.
Well, this show's important to us, so we're going to wrap it up on that note. This is at DeFrango11. That is at Chris Calamita. The beer of the show today, the Belltime beer, was one I brought back from my parents' place that my younger brother had given me. Boulder beer, slope style, winter IPA. You know, it started to taste better as it warmed up. I don't mind a not completely frosty beverage these days. And it's 6.4% alcohol, so not a particularly terribly alcoholic IPA. But a pretty tasty one nonetheless. It has the nice kind of spice combination, which is usually cinnamon, nutmeg, ginger, things of that nature for any winter ale. But put it in an IPA, which is it's a nice flavor. So, brand. After the two names was at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes if you so feel like it. And since he had a great send-off last week, I am going to let Chris finish this one off.
Bye, everybody. I had nothing there.